All right, turn your Bible to Matthew chapter 5. Tonight, a familiar passage, but this is a Bible study, so I don't apologize that we're going to dig into it a little more in depth. So it's a passage you've heard before, but hopefully, whoa, is this both on? This is on, right? Okay, that's on. Okay. We'll go to some places as we study this. We'll look at some other passages that maybe you aren't as familiar with. So you're going to see hear something new and hopefully see this in a new light, and maybe it'll bring something home very applicable to what we're doing in the coming weeks this summer. So Matthew chapter 5, verse 13. "Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt hath lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is henceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and trodden under the foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick. And it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." So this is in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, right? So this is Matthew writing this here. And for whatever reason here, Matthew records this one sermon. Now Matthew, as one of the apostles, heard many, many sermons of Jesus. And for some reason, he records this one sermon, even though Jesus says many of these things in other sermons at other times. As a teacher, you know, you've heard many of the same things in many of the sermons that you've heard pastor preach. You've sometimes heard the same joke even, but you've heard many of the same truths, hopefully multiple times. And that's good. And that's what Jesus was. You heard these a lot of times, but he seems to record this one very long sermon. It goes from chapter 5 all the way, and their response to it is seen in the last few verses of chapter 7. So it's quite the sermon, the famous Sermon on the Mount. I don't know because it doesn't say, but my guess, the reason why Matthew records this one in such detail and then specifically records how people felt about it after they heard it and how amazed they were, I kind of suspect, don't know for sure, that this was maybe the first sermon that Matthew heard, and this is him hearing, and that would stick with you. This is the first time you heard Jesus of Nazareth preach. You'd remember that sermon in huge detail, because of course we know he went all over the place preaching and Matthew with him, so he heard a lot of sermons covering the same stuff, but he seems to remember this one and this event in great detail. So this is that famous Sermon on the Mount, right? Jesus' most famous sermon recorded kind of with the most words recorded in any sermon. And right here at the start, of course, we start off with the blessed are the poor in spirit. You know the what we call the Beatitudes. And here's a trivia for you. Each one of those actually references an Old Testament passage. And I wonder how many times we've actually gone and looked up all those passages. It's kind of interesting that I'll leave for you to study. But he goes through that, and he kind of challenges their thinking on, they thought, boy, if I'm poor, if I'm meek, if I'm lowly, then I'm no one, and the rich and proud and powerful, they're the most important people. They must be the most righteous people. And of course, he attacks that thinking and corrects that thinking, and he uses the Bible as the basis for it. Like I said, each one of those phrases in the Beatitudes is referencing a passage, most of them either in Isaiah or Psalms. And so he goes through, and he's using the Bible to challenge their thinking. And they're starting to realize that maybe our thinking about what is right, and am I righteous or not, isn't quite there. And then he addresses, and I think really this statement here we just read, that's right after that, is really giving the outline for his message, essentially. This is one of the key things that they're misunderstood, his audience there, he needed to change the thinking in. Now he covers so many different things as he goes through. But this kind of gives, this is one of the key things where their thinking was wrong, where their understanding was wrong. And it's almost like an outline. Sorry, I don't have a printed outline tonight, but my outline is very simple. I also only have 3 points, and they're based, I think, on the 3 points that Jesus has here as we go into what he's talking about, this light. Now, notice this passage, so familiar, right? He talks about the salt, we'll talk about that in a second, in the city. And the third example, illustration he gives is the candle, right? Men do not light a candle, they're not going to light a candle and put it under a bushel. So here's something that normally has a purpose, but if you use it in the wrong way, it can't fulfill its purpose. That's what Jesus is talking about, something that they have, his audience has, but they're not using it for its correct purpose. And what he's talking about is something that if those of you happen to be here a couple Sunday nights ago, the last time I preached here, it was we talked about our righteousness being obsolete. I went into that, and I kind of wanted to almost get into this. It would have taken an extra 30 minutes, and you probably didn't want to stay that long. So I kind of cut that out of my sermon. So here it is tonight. So if my righteousness is obsolete, if now as I'm saved by grace, but God still wants me to live righteously, now that I'm on my way to heaven and have Christ's righteousness put on my account, what then is the purpose of me living a holy, sanctified life as a Christian? I'm saved and on my way to heaven. What is the point of that? And now Jesus, who is he talking to? He's preaching this sermon, right? And of course, it gives the whole context, right? There's the multitudes. He goes up to a mountain. Where was he? He was in Galilee, right? And gives exactly where he was, right? So, it says there were great multitudes, and it tells exactly who he's preaching to. Look at this. There followed him a great multitude of people from Galilee, from Decapolis, from Jerusalem, from Judea, and from beyond Jordan. There's something significant about that list. Those were the areas around there, within, you know, even a day's walking distance, where there were large Jewish communities. He was preaching to a group of Jews. These were people that every Saturday they went to synagogue and they learned the Old Testament scriptures. Notice all the way through the Sermon on the Mount, he's referencing the Bible, but he doesn't have to get up and read the Bible because they already knew it. So that's why he said in the Beatitudes, each one of those references a phrase from another verse in the Old Testament. They were familiar with those passages. They had sung those psalms. They had read those prophecies by Isaiah. And he just had to use one phrase from it, like, blessed are the poor in spirit, there's the kingdom of heaven. And they knew that they were talking about Isaiah 57. It was obvious to them because they'd heard it in synagogue every Saturday. So he's speaking to Jews who knew the Old Testament, who knew the Ten Commandments, and their whole life worked hard on keeping the Ten Commandments. It's very important to understand the entire sermon. That is who he was talking to, right? Now, we got to make sure we're careful in our Bible study. Okay, this is a passage speaking to the Jews. Okay, well, I don't need that. Let me just keep flipping until it gets to a passage speaking to me. No. All the things in the Bible, of course, are written for our learning. And so we have to, so it's absolutely 100% all that applies to me. But in understanding what he's saying, I have to understand the context of when he's saying it, who he's saying it to. So he's speaking to Jews. That's why all the way through the next rest of this chapter, Everything he talks about, he starts off, "Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time." Where did they hear it? They heard it in the synagogue. So every time he's referring to, you know the rabbis told you this from the Bible. Now I'm going to tell you this, and he's building on that. So he's building on, he's preaching to people that had a knowledge of the Bible. The Sermon on the Mount is not a sermon to the lost Gentiles of the world that worshipped idols or anything. No. It's completely beginning to end to those that knew the Bible inside and out and who knew the Ten Commandments and their whole and a whole lot more than the Ten Commandments, the thousands of commandments, and a whole lot more than that, all the extra traditions that the Jewish rabbis had added on to the commandments, right? So they'd heard all these things about being righteous, and they wanted to be righteous. They had the law. And it's important to understand that they were proud about it. We are better than all of that rabble out there, the lost, the heathen, because we have the law. We have God's truth. We know right and wrong. Those guys are out there worshiping their idols and their terrible ignorance. And we're more righteous than them because we have the law. We have the Bible, right? When we say the law, we're talking about the Old Testament scriptures, usually even more specifically the first five books, right? The law of Moses. And so we've got that, and that makes us better. Right, we are more righteous than that wicked heathen out there because we have this stance, because we have this we're doctrinally right and they're doctrinally wrong, right? And if we're not careful, of course, as Baptists, we can fall into the same, you know, we can get to that same feeling really quickly. Hey, we grew up going to Sunday school every Sunday. We know the Bible. We have a stance that's right. I believe what our doctrinal statement for our church is based on the Bible. And we can look to the Bible and see that, yes, what we're teaching is correct. And then we can point at another church and look what they're teaching is wrong, all right? That's the people, and I understand this is who Jesus is talking to. And he is absolutely not downplaying their seeking after righteousness. In fact, right, the next couple of verses, what it says, you jump down a little bit, it says, I say unto you, in verse 20, jump down to verse 20, you'll see this, I say unto you, except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. Of course, we're seeing there and we understand they are not getting to heaven by being righteous. So here's a people, a sanctified people, a people called out by God, and God is calling on the children of Israel, his chosen people, to live differently than the rest of the world. And they're working at it, right? They're not worshiping idols. They're different in the way they dress, and they have things they don't do. And this entire audience out there, he's not sitting there, oh, I think you ate pig last. No, they didn't eat pigs, okay? They went to synagogue. That's his entire audience. Again, that's the list. These groups that have come, it's the Jewish people that have come out from all the big areas, you know, from up in Galilee, yes, for where it was, but also down in Judea and these other places. These were the places where there were, at that moment in time, large populations of Jews. He's speaking to Jews, okay? So that's important. Because then he says this, so he gets to this part about them being the salt of the earth. You're the light of the world, right? It says, let your light so shine before men, so let's get to the heart of this here, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father, which is in heaven. So the core of what he's explaining here is they have good works, and now he's explaining what you don't understand is what the purpose for these good works are. Why does God want you to live different than the rest of the world? Why does God want you to be sanctified, set apart, and have many ways that you live differently than the world around you? They worked so hard on doing it, but they didn't pay attention to why. And he talks about them being the light of the world and how useless this is if they don't let that light shine. The light here, okay, so within this allegory that he's giving, we're just kind of wishy-washy. We're thinking, the light, that must be the light of the gospel, preach the gospel. Okay, yes, we use the verse in that way, and that's okay, but he's saying that they see your good works, right? Me being good, that's not the gospel. The gospel is the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. So don't make the mistake, and many have, of coming to this passage and thinking, oh, this passage here is God's plan to evangelize the lost and reach the world. It's not. Did you catch that? This here, let your light so shine before men, that is not God's plan for reaching the world. If we want that, we just go to the end of Matthew. Go into all the world, preach the gospel to every creature, right? You have the Great Commission in Matthew chapter 28. We have that. We know what God's plan for reaching the lost is to go and preach the gospel. Right, so if we want the lost to be saved, we need to go to them and preach that Jesus Christ died on the cross, rose again. They're not going to be saved by our good works. They're going to be saved by the gospel of Jesus' death on the cross and that good news. So this passage isn't explaining this is how we're going to reach the lost, but it's explaining the purpose for our sanctification. And the purpose for our sanctification happens to be so that we can reach the lost. Do you catch the way it went around there? It's not like we're sanctified because us being holy is going to reach the world for Christ. That's not going to happen. But as we preach the gospel and reach the world for Christ, the purpose of us being holy while we do that, that's necessary. They'll see our good works and glorify. Let's put the example. We just read a missionary letter, right? So it's a perfect example there, right? So here's our missionary, right, Brother Wer. If you didn't remember that, right, he had 10 Commandments up on the wall. The people don't get saved just from hearing the 10 Commandments. Him keeping the 10 Commandments in that church isn't going to get people. Him just going there by the military base and being a good person, upstanding moral character, keeping all the 10 Commandments and being holy, he could just go there and do that, and those airmen would not have been saved. Right? They're going to say because he challenged them with the gospel. He. Do you know for sure if you die today, you go to heaven? And then he was able to use the Ten Commandments that were sitting up on the wall to show them, hey, I'm not on my way to heaven. And that's what, of course, Jesus is about to do in the whole rest of this passage. I'm sure as he went through that, I wasn't there, but I'm pretty sure, Brother Wer, he's like, oh, you see those Ten Commandments? Oh, you thought you kept the one on murder? And then he probably went to this passage right here. So, yeah, Jesus says, you know, Bible says, thou shalt not kill, but if you're angry at your brother, that's the passage for that, for using the Ten Commandments to get people to understand the need for the gospel. But here's the point of what this, let your light so shine before men. If those airmen were sitting in that church with Brother Wuer, and they know that they saw the night before him with someone else's wife, and then he's sitting there, oh, have you ever kept the Ten Commandments? Do you think they would get saved? Now, is Brother Wuer keeping the Ten Commandments that the same as him preaching the gospel? No, he needs to preach the gospel. But if he's going to sit there and show, look, because of these Ten Commandments, that's why you need to get saved, and show them the need for salvation, and they showed them the righteousness of God, and they got saved. But if those same airmen saw him getting drunk at the bar the night before, they wouldn't have listened. You see, it's like, our missionary needed to be sanctified, not because his sanctification saved people. He isn't saving those airmen. Our missionaries aren't saving people out there because they're just going there and living a holy life. They're going and preaching the gospel. But if they went and preached the gospel and they weren't set apart, they weren't sanctified, they weren't living, they weren't doing good works, no one would listen to them. Now, where's the key passage to this? You understand this? Again, we're talking about the Jews here. So let's go to Exodus chapter 19. This is the big passage that the Jews were missing here. They had no excuse for not, I mean, God gave them the Ten Commandments. But remember, this is Exodus. This is the God that just gave them the Ten Commandments, then explains why, and is telling them to live different, right? In Exodus chapter 19, we're going to go to verse 5. This is God who just told his people, you are my chosen people. I want you to live a sanctified life, set apart. You're not going to live like the rest of the heathen. Here's the law, and he's going to give them the law and give them the Ten Commandments, right? And then he says this, and it was there. I'm sure the people listening had heard this passage in synagogue, but just kind of breezed over it. They were missing this. Listen to what it says here. This is God speaking to his people, his chosen people. Exodus 19:5. Now, therefore, if ye will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people. Boy, that's pretty special for God to choose this people and say, I want you to keep this covenant, and you're going to be this special, valuable, one-of-a-kind, unique treasure to me. And there's not more than one children of Israel. It's just he didn't pick this family, and just in case Abraham didn't work, went and grabbed another chosen people over here. This is special. He says, you're going to be a peculiar people above all people. For all the earth is mine, right? So he's got all the people. Like, notice, you're going to be special, but all the people are mine. Okay, catch this. This is very important, because we think of the Old Testament, we think, oh, is God's chosen people? What is that all about? Why do we have God's chosen people? Well, here it is. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and an holy nation. And these are the words which I also say unto the children of Israel. Ye shall be to me a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. Now, wait. There's 12 tribes of Israel. Were all of them priests? If we know the Old Testament, we know that, no, the priest only could come from the tribe of Levi, right? And even those are the Levites. Actually, the priests were a subgroup within the Levites, right? And in fact, Aaron, who's there, only the children of Aaron could be the high priest. So they weren't, but they were. You see, there was one of the 12 tribes was supposed to be the priest. Their job was, the Levites' job, was to teach God and the word of God to the rest of the nation of Israel. What are those other 11 tribes supposed to be doing? They're supposed to be priests to the rest of the world. That was the plan from day one. That, yes, okay, we have this high priest, and he's helping minister to these other priests, and the priests to the Levites, and the Levites to the whole nation of Israel, and the nation of Israel to the rest of the world. They're a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. Yes, the high priest was holy, but the whole nation was to be holy. They had a purpose, and it was to show God's holiness to the whole world, not to keep it to themselves. And by the time we got to Jesus sitting there in Galilee, preaching to the Jews, they'd forgotten their purpose. God had told, they remembered, we're God's special treasure. We're sanctified, we're set apart, we're this godly special nation, but they've forgotten that they were called out to be separate. And I have to ask myself, I see this same thing. He says a candle, right? So a candle, he puts on a candlestick. Now, we think of wax candles so much. Probably a candle, we know kind of from history, they didn't use, they used some wax, but mostly that we think of wax when we think candle, just because kind of in northeastern Europe, that was the kind of candle, because olive trees didn't grow there. But candles in the Bible almost always means a candle that burns not wax, but olive oil, right? So you just get some olive oil here, right? And then we have something just like this. This is like a replica of a lamp from that time period, from Israel. They dug one up near Jerusalem, and this is a simple replica of it. But it's just simple. You put the oil in here, and it has a wick just like your candle. But unlike your wax candles you might have at home that, you know, smell good and so forth, where the light melts the wax and stuff. It's already liquid because it was pressed from olives, which grows there in the Mediterranean area. The olives was what they had. And so it cost money. And so they would have this, and they would light this. You light this just like any other candle. And you just light it, and it has a flame, and it gives light. And when it does, you put it somewhere where it can light the house. The purpose of lighting this flame is to give light to the house. You don't just have this for the sake of having it. You don't have this for the sake of being light to itself. And so he gives this illustration of you light this, and it has this flame, and it's, if you cover it with something, it actually is going to make itself brighter. I mean, if you put it under that bushel, it's actually going to reflect off the walls, and it's going to shine plenty of light on itself, and it's going to be very, very bright. But that's not its purpose. Its purpose isn't to shine light on itself. Its purpose is to shine light in the darkness. And so here we're sanctified, we're holy. The purpose of that isn't to shine to themselves, look how holy I am. But here they are, set apart, sanctified, holy, to shine light on others. So, like I said, it was only 3 points of my message. Here they are. Number one, their salt was polluted by hypocrisy. So because they had forgotten the purpose of their holiness, he likens it to light, but he also likens it to salt, right? You know, the idea is your food tastes bad, so you have bland, nasty-tasting meat. You put a lot of salt on it, and now it tastes better. So the idea is anything you have that tastes bad, you put salt on it. What happens when your salt tastes bad? What do you salt that with? Right? That's the kind of the question. And so here it is. Here's something that they had, but because it was polluted, now it couldn't serve its purpose. So here's the holiness, and here they were hypocrites. And as you read through, and you can go through, he deals with every level, right? Oh, look, we're so holy, we don't murder people. Yeah, but you get angry at people. Oh, we don't commit adultery. Yeah, but you divorce your wife. Oh, look, you know, if I give an oath, if I make an oath, I always keep that oath. Yeah, but when you didn't officially make an oath, you lie. So all the other times you're lying. Is that the only time you tell the truth? That's what Jesus deals with. That's the hypocrisy. And we say, well, we're going to reach the world, and we're so much better. Because, look, we don't have that. We don't accept that wicked lifestyle. And I'm glad we don't. And when we don't think this is okay, and the world is going, you know, accepting all this wicked stuff. And they know that we stand against that wickedness. And when they come in here, and then, yeah, we don't have that particular wickedness, but then there's some other wickedness. Then we're fighting with each other, accusing each other. They come to the church, and what they're going to see, and they're not going to glorify. Paul talks about this in Romans chapter 2. He talks about, oh, the Jews, you're a Jew, you make your boast of the law and all of this, but then you're hypocrites. And he deals with it. If you read the Romans chapter 2, it's so powerful, you know. Thou that abhorrest idols, dost thou commit sacrilege? Okay, it doesn't matter how much we accuse the world of being wicked. If we're wicked, they're not going to listen to us. They see the same sin in us. They say, but you know what? I don't murder people. Right? Everyone at work knows you're a Christian, and so because you're a Christian, you're not going to murder them. But then you're always getting angry at them and yelling and cussing them out if they don't do everything perfect. And then you say, oh, come to church and get saved because see my good works? I don't murder people. It's not working. Your salt is not making the food tastes better, it's making it taste worse. And so here you are preaching the gospel, and there's an unsavory taste as you're getting the gospel. You're like, oh, here, hey, why don't you come to my church? Here, I got this invitation. I'd love for you to come. And you know what they're thinking of? The times you cussed them out at work, the times you slacked off and lied to the boss. And we can say all day, oh, but you know, and so there are plenty of, how useless is a Christian? And they know you stand against, you know, homosexuality. You know, oh, yeah, I'm so much better. Look, you know, I'm straight, and I got a wife, and we're married, and we're, you know, at different genders. This is great. And then they see you flirting with the girl at work. How good is that? What good is that salt? That's the point here, you know. And so he preaches against this hypocrisy that they have. So their salt was polluted by hypocrisy. Here's another one. Their city was hid by isolation. There's something else they missed. They couldn't just sit there and be holy, and that would impact the world. They actually, if you were going to be a holy nation, a kingdom of priests, you kind of actually have to go and tell the world about God. No amount of sitting in their isolated communities is going to tell the world about God. Does the world even care that there's a group of really holy people there in Jerusalem doing their little thing in the walls, and there's signs up, if you're not a Jew, you go past this point, you get killed. There were signs all around the temple like that. The archaeologists have found them there. They were a thing. Oh, great, there's lots of holiness inside this. Oh, that's wonderful. Is that reaching the world? Now, I'm not saying, again, the Bible says that, you know, if you're a Jew, you weren't supposed to go in there. That's correct. But they were supposed to go to the world with the gospel. It's amazing how broken this. Look at this. Jesus comes to the Samaritan, right? Well, notice he mentions here, right? There's the ones up in Galilee, and from Decapolis and Jerusalem, there's a little area right in the middle of this group that's not on the list. No one was there from Samaria. Then Jesus walks through Samaria, sits down to this woman, starts talking to her, and what does he say? And then saith the woman of Samaritan, how is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which is a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Sounds like they lost their purpose. Here, how all these holy Jews, and were any of them doing anything to bring the truth of God to the Samaritans? No, they don't even talk to us. Because, you know, we're unholy Jews. We're unholy Samaritans. I definitely want to talk to the Gentiles, the godless heathen. I'm not going to talk to them. This was a thing. And it actually took a lot longer than most people realized for them to get over it. You think, oh, Jesus preached, you know, once they heard Jesus preaching about, you know, go ye unto all the world, then they just went. No. Matthew, Peter, all of them. Oh, no, we only talk to Jews about the gospel. It took them a long time. You can go through in the book of Acts. It's crazy. In Acts chapter 10, not 1, 10, okay? Peter is finally, for the first time, talking to a Gentile that wasn't a Jew. And he says this, ye know how it is an unlawful thing for a man that is a Jew to keep company or to come unto one that is of another nation. But God has showed me that I should not call anything common or unclean. Wait a minute. That's unlawful. Peter, apostle, could you give me a chapter and verse on that? No, it's not in the Bible. It's unlawful for us to have any company with. That's not in the Bible. They were supposed to be a kingdom of priests. Here's what the Bible says. I found it. Leviticus 19. And if a stranger sojourn with thee in your land, these Gentiles were in the promised land. There were Romans that had moved there, right? So they were strangers sojourning in his land. This is who he was talking to. Ye shall not vex him, but the stranger that dwelleth with you shall be unto you as one born among you. Ye shall love him as thyself, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. I guess it's as clear as you can get. Peter was dead wrong, and he'd been taught that in all. That's how we know this is the case of the people. Everyone listening to the Sermon on the Mount grew up in synagogue saying, don't ever go to dinner at a Gentile's house. That's wicked. And that's what they were supposed to be doing. They were supposed to be going to, they were supposed to be getting the, they were supposed to be the light of the world. And they hid their city by isolation. We're supposed to be sanctified. That means separated in terms of our living. But that doesn't mean we're supposed to be isolated from the world. We're supposed to be getting the gospel to the world. How do we do that? We'll go out and talk to them and tell them about Christ. That doesn't mean, oh, well, I'll just go out and hang out with them at the bar and get drunk with them. That's not, no. We're separate, but we ought to talk to them about Christ. We ought to invite them to go to church. We ought to show up for the Dover Blitz and get the word out. Otherwise, we miss the purpose, right? What point is it as constructing all these cool decorations tomorrow for Vacation Bible School? It's going to look awesome. It's going to be like you walk in, you're walking into an Egyptian pyramid. It's all going to be Egypt because it's Joseph theme, right? So we're going to have all this Egyptian stuff, and it's going to be the story of Joseph, and it's just going to be awesome for those kids. That is, if we tell any lost kids to come. Now, it's going to be great for our kids, and that's an important part of it. But this is an evangelistic thing. We're missing our purpose if we got the light shining really brightly inside the building. And we don't invite any lost people to come in. That's a light hiding under the bushel basket. We shine and bounce the light off of these walls all day long. But we have to go to the lost. We have to shine. We have to let it shine. So their city was hid by isolation. And you can go through the Bible, all of that. There's so clear what Jesus taught. Jesus said, I pray not that thou takest them out of the world, but thou should keep them from the evil. They are not of the world, even as not of the world, but sanctify them through thy truth. Thy word is truth. As thou hast sent me into the world, even so have I sent them into the world. We are sent into the world, but separated from the world at the same time. They were to live differently, to be sanctified. And there's a perfect illustration of that. Every day, a priest dressed differently than everyone else, and a Levite dressed differently, acting with a whole extra set of rules, would walk through and talk to the common people there in Israel. And that was the illustration. Oh, wait, we have a separate set of rules. We're going to be sanctified in ourselves. Why? So that we can share the gospel with these Gentiles over here. And they missed the whole thing, the whole illustration. Right? And so finally, of course, their light was hid by pride. Look at me, I have sanctification, and they forgot the purpose, right? And you go on in the Sermon on the Mount, and here they are showing how awesome they are, and Jesus, of course, has to tell them this, judge not that ye be not judged, for with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged, right? We know this, and of course, it's a familiar passage. I don't have to go through it, right? And the whole story Jesus gave of hey, you're looking at the little mote in the other guy's eye, and you got a beam in your eye. He says, thou hypocrite! Take the beam out of thy own eye. And that's the point. Here they are. They have this light. They're the light of the world. That light is being hid because they think they're better than everyone else. Here's their interaction with a Gentile. Gentile. You don't know that. You aren't one of God's chosen people. You're not sanctified like I am. You guys worshiping your false idols. I know the true God. I worship there in Jerusalem. I'm better than you because I have the Bible. And you're looking at, boy, their God must be the God of snobs. Their God must be the God of haughty pride. Not interested. And Jesus challenges them, let your light so shine. Right? What is it? That they may see your good works and glorify your Father, which is in heaven. What does that look like? I had an experience when our youngest child was born. Here in York Hospital, just not long ago, and we went there. We had the baby. Of course, you're dead tired the next morning. But they got to come by and do their rounds, and they have a schedule for a pediatrician to come and see the baby, make sure there's nothing wrong with them, right? So they do this thing, and they have to have someone that's reality is there's experienced nurses there that probably would have seen if there's something wrong with your baby before then. But, it's at some point, the officially authorized, paid an enormous amount of money pediatrician's got to get in there, get paid $70 an hour, just yep, nothing wrong with that baby, and move on, right? So, and, usually it's this routine, right? The doctor comes in. The nurses are all taking care of everything else, and they okay, good. Okay, on to the next one. They're doing their rounds. It's their job. They got to hit all the babies being born there that day and all of that, and they check on everyone, right? So here comes this pediatrician, and you know how there's that dynamic in the medical community. There's nurses, and then there's like doctors, and there's like surgeons, and they're then God is a few centimeters above that. That's kind of how it feels in a hospital. Like the doctor walks in. Oh, you got to do everything they say. And there's this kind of feeling of the nurses kind of just get bossed around by the doctors. They're the big in charge. And there's a reason kind of like you kind of respect the doctor's time because they took them like what for a pediatrician I looked it up. It's a minimum of 11. Usually it's 15 years of school to be able to be a pediatrician, right? So that's a little bit more school than I've had, okay? So quite a bit, okay? So they don't require 15 years of school necessarily to be an assistant pastor. So that's pretty qualified. That's a lot of very specialty training. And it's not like we, sit in your classes and nod off type of stuff. I mean, it's intense, hands-on, all this kind of stuff, right? So it takes a fortune to train them. They make a lot of money. Well, here comes this doctor, and is checking on the baby, making sure nothing's wrong with them. And of course, they got to take the diaper off and check everything, make sure everything's good, right? That and if you know about newborns, there's this problem, this risk you run every time you take a diaper off a newborn. And the risk is that, that will be the perfect time for the baby to relieve themselves, because, something about the fresh air or something, I don't know. But already my son had peed on the nurse and it peed on me, and now here comes the doctor comes in, and sure enough, he's doing his and he gets peed on. And of course, because the diaper off, the diaper is wet now, and the whole blanket on the crib mattress, it's all soaking wet. And this doctor, now the one thing you knew when this doctor walked into the room, that this was a Christian doctor, or at least, purported to be. He had a little cross pin and American flag pin. He has many pins as they let him put on. You could just tell by his face, he's the kind of person that he wants everyone to know he's a Christian. I don't know what kind of Christian. I didn't get to talk to him. I don't know where he goes to church or anything. But, clearly, he identifies with Christ. But then I saw something I did not expect. This highly trained doctor, get some wipes. Let's look through the drawers here. Where did the nurses put that? Okay, finds a diaper. Changes my son's diaper. Puts a clean diaper on him. Takes the dirty wipe, goes and puts it in the trash. Oh man, the blanket's wet. Looks over in the cabinet, finds a new blanket, changes the soil blanket off the bed, puts a new one on there, talks to us kindly about the baby. Oh, excited, great. A doctor. I'm sorry, normally a doctor comes in, okay, checked out, okay, nurse, yeah, we gotta, take care of this mess now. I'm off to the next one. That's the norm. And I've seen that happen before at other doctors in other hospitals. And here's this doctor. As you could tell as he talks, he doesn't think he's better than anyone. He talks about your child, but he doesn't put on airs. He acted like a Christian. I said, well, maybe he's just really nice to patients because, gets him good. Later, he leaves. The nurse is in talking about something else, and my wife mentions the doctor about how nice he was, and man, he was really kind. I really like that pediatrician. I'll never forget the nurse's response. She said, "Yeah, we don't deserve him." You could see it on her face. There was only one doctor that was like that, and everyone knew he was a Christian, and he let his light shine. Because sometimes you think, oh, here's the one that, oh, they are a Christian, oh, he's probably obnoxious, probably got opinions, whatever. No. Everyone knew he was a Christian, and everyone that worked with him knew. I could see it walk by the nurses. They wanted to be on shift when he was on shift. Because he treated the nurses with respect. He treated the parents with respect. He treated the babies with respect. That's the way it ought to be. Now, that by itself, if I was a lost person, I wouldn't have gotten saved just by him being kind to my baby and being humble. But knowing that as a Christian, it sure would have opened the door the next time someone shared the gospel, the next time someone comes by and says, hey, you want to come to my church? We got a vacation Bible school. That would change the whole dynamic of how I respond to that. Now, they need the gospel. But if I've lost the savor, if my light's hidden, God calls us to be. You got to finish with this, because the Bible says this. 1 Peter, this is the New Testament. This is Peter talking to Christians now. That was Jesus talking to the Jews. And this is Peter talking to us. But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, and holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. So what If you haven't caught, he was quoting there, right, from the verse I read at the start in Exodus 19. That's what God said of his chosen people. And now here's Peter saying, this is you as Christians. God called you to be a holy priesthood. So he's called you to be sanctified. And yes, we need to be zealous about holiness, right? In Titus 2, who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works. So we need that zeal for good works, but we cannot make the mistake that the Jews at this time did. And say, oh, that sanctification, it's for us. It's not for us to get to heaven. Jesus did that. Me living a sanctified life, having high standards, doing right, speaking right, being pure and holy, that's not going to get me to heaven. Jesus' righteousness is already getting me to heaven. Because I could never undo the sin I've already done. I'm a sinner on my way to hell without the redemption of Jesus Christ's blood on the cross. So what's the purpose then of me being sanctified? A royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people. So now as I go and preach the gospel, they'll see my good works and glorify our Father which is in heaven. So that's the purpose for my light. The problem is that wasn't that they didn't have light. They had a light. It was shining bright. But because they worked so hard, they were zealous of their good works. They really were. They worked hard to keep the law, to be sanctified, to be different than the sinful world around them. But because they had forgotten the purpose of that light, they didn't let it shine when it was supposed to shine. And if I can say, well, I'm so holy, I'm so righteous, but I'm not willing to go to my neighbor and let him know I'm a Christian, and go beyond just letting him know I'm a Christian, but actually invite him to church, what good does that sanctification do? And if I'm out there and I'm inviting all my neighbors to church, but then they see in me that I'm not separated unto God, what good will this invitation do?